Good morning, everyone, again. Hey, Ryan, was this a hint that you want me to do yours again? Because I can see you've left your notes for me. I mean, I'll try. I don't think I'll do as good as you did. You rocked it last week. So, all right. So this morning, we're going to kick off again. We're in our third missionary journey of Paul. And if you remember, 2 years ago, we kind of started this series. And it started with Paul's conversion, his subsequent first journey, and we also talked a little bit about his early life. And then last year, we talked about his second journey and covered that whole thing in great detail. And now we're wrapping up this year, the rest of the series, and his third journey. So far this month, we've heard from Pastor Don, we've heard from Gary, and we've heard from Ryan about Paul's return back to Jerusalem and the important people, places, and events that occurred along the way. All told, this journey lasted 5 years. Now, I don't know about you, but that's a long time. And it covered 2,500 miles. 2,500 miles by foot, boat, and animal. 2,500 miles in a truck or a car is a long time. But I can't imagine doing it how Paul did it. So 5 years, 2,500 miles. Unless you've been in the military or on a long-term work assignment, most of us can't relate to that length of time and the events that Paul must have seen on this journey. When we read biblical stories like this, we need to consider not just the facts, but how Paul must have felt coming home. When you go on a trip, do you ever get to the point where you're like, I'm just ready to go home? You know, for a lot of different reasons, right? So what are some of the highlight stories that Paul is going to remember here? He didn't have his phone. He couldn't pull it out and scroll through his photo gallery to remember these things. He literally had to put them here. In coming home, what would he have most likely looked forward to the most? A bed? A meal? But on the trip, what are some of the things he would have remembered? I know when I've traveled, the smells. I don't know what it is. I can remember a smell. When you come home, do you ever stop and think, man, my house smells different? I really enjoy that smell because it just is me, right? And the faces. There are people when you come home you just want to see. But then he met all those new faces on the journeys. And we know that some of them he met multiple times. So let's get started. Real quick, I'm going to jump backwards to last week a little bit in some of the verses that Ryan covered. And I want to do this particularly for Acts 22, verses 24 to 29. And in this passage, we learned that the Apostle Paul has returned to Jerusalem. And Ryan did a fantastic job, he really did, talking about Paul in his ever-changing circumstances. And not just how the circumstances changed, but how he responded to those circumstances. And listen, if you weren't here last week, that's fine. We all got life. Things happen. We can't get here. What I would do is I would encourage you, go online to our website, gc3.org, and look up the past messages. Listen to it. Ryan did a fantastic job. And if you don't want to go online and you're more of an app person, we have an app for those of you that didn't know. And you can find those messages on that app as well. So, in the last few verses of Ryan's message last week, we see through a set of unjust circumstances, the Apostle Paul was dragged away from the temple by a Jewish mob and threatened with death. The uproar of the mob caused such a ruckus that the Roman army shows up. You ever been to one of these parties and then the cops get called? This is kind of what happened here, okay? And Paul gets arrested by the Romans. And the commander takes him into custody, and then he says Paul is to be whipped. Now, I don't know about you, but the best way to get a confession from somebody is to beat it out of them. I've just learned this. Happens with the kids, The best way to get a confession is physical violence. Okay? But Paul had other plans. He brings the entire thing to a screeching halt. And he claims his Roman citizenship, which meant that this was no longer a quarrel amongst Jews. There were now legal protections that Paul was entitled to, and that Rome was going to be involved here. So I just wanted to recap the ending of Ryan's stuff last week simply because it brings some context to our message today. So turn with me to Acts chapter 22. You can go all the way to the end of chapter 22 because we're going to start in verse 30. And then as we move on, we're just literally going to flip into the next chapter, chapter 23, and we're going to cover that entire chapter. That's our primary text for today. It is a huge chunk of passage. And no, I am not going to stand up here and read it. Sorry, I know that disappoints some of you. But I am not going to do that because you do not want to hear me read like that. But there are two main themes I want to point out today. And from this text, you can draw a lot of other themes when you read through it, but there are two that I really want to point out. My first theme for the day that I want to point out is standing up can cost you. Standing up can cost you. My second theme, life doesn't always work out the way we think it should. You feel that one? Life doesn't always work out the way we think it should. How many of you can honestly say that you've taken a stand for someone or something important? You took a stand, you stood up in a tough situation because you felt like it was the right thing to do. What I want to do now is I want to look at Paul and some of the costs that he faced because he chose to stand up. So we're going to kick off today in Acts 22:30, and I will read this one for you. Acts 22:30. The next day, the commander ordered the leading priests into session with the Jewish High Council. He wanted to find out what the trouble was all about. So he released Paul to have him stand before them. Paul had been taken into custody by the Roman commander after the accusations were flying that Ryan touched on last week. And those accusations led to some real escalation. Things got pretty heated real quick, and they turned physical. They were literally going to harm Paul. Now, the commander ordered Paul to stand before the Jewish High Council and figure out what this uproar was all about. So Paul was essentially standing before them in a trial situation. He was going to have to answer to what the accusations were against him. He had been accused of breaking the law. He had been beaten. He'd been arrested. And now he's standing trial before the council. You can see how quickly Paul's costs were accumulating, even in such a very short period of time after his return to Jerusalem. We're going to fast forward now to Acts 23. And we're going to go to verses 1 through 9. And I'm going to summarize this for you. And I'm just going to kind of give you the gist of it. So Paul was standing before the council. And you're thinking, who's the council? So the council are a group of religious leaders who attended and presided over all of the matters of the Jewish religion. The council was made up of two different groups. We had the Sadducees and the Pharisees. They were both Jewish, but they believed different things when it came to the faith. The two big points of difference were the Messiah and the resurrection. So as Paul is standing before them, he wastes no time, and he immediately declares his innocence. And we read in Acts 23:1, the end of the verse, Paul responds with, as he's standing before them, "Brothers, I have always lived before God with a clear conscience." Did you catch that? Did you catch it? He was telling the council that he was accountable to God's laws, not the man-made ones that they were accusing him of breaking. The high priest, who we can kind of consider the judge over this trial, immediately calls for Paul to be struck. Slapped, if you want to call it that way. And he did that because Paul was being accused of breaking the law. But Paul immediately calls the high priest out, immediately, for breaking the law himself. The people who were in attendance, who were watching this trial, who were there to maybe even give some testimony, they can't believe this. They can't believe that Paul just called the high priest out in front of everybody. So the mood in the room starts to change a little bit. And Paul, sensing that, he immediately issues an apology to the high priest. And when he does that, immediately after that, he turns to the members of the council and he says, "My fellow Pharisees, you believe what I believe." Because if you remember right, Paul was a Pharisee. He says, "You believe what I believe, and I am speaking the truth here." Which then starts a battle between the Sadducees and the Pharisees. And not just a battle, not just an argument, not just a difference of opinion. It starts something much deeper than that. It escalates and escalates. Essentially, gas was just poured on it. Paul poured gas on these two factions to point out their differences. And it starts to turn violent again. And as the temperature in the room goes up, we see this in Acts 23:10, the Roman commander steps in because he's afraid they're going to tear Paul apart. They're going to tear him limb from limb for inciting this violence. And the commander orders his men to go in and rescue Paul, and it says, by force. So he wasn't just going to walk in the room and declare, "I am the commander. I am here. I'm going to take this man." No. He knows that this is going to be trouble. He knows that this has the potential to blow up. So he orders his men to go get Paul by force. Fast forward with me a couple more verses, and we're going to get to Acts 23, verses 12 through 15. And it talks about Paul making the high council so mad. In some ways, he'd made a mockery of them. He claimed he didn't know who the high priest was. He divided the council between the two different sects or groups inside of the council. He made a mockery of them, and he really made them look foolish in front of their peers. And they were so angry at this that they decided it's best if we just get rid of him. We just get rid of him. If Paul disappeared today, it would make all of this go away. So here the Jewish leaders of the high council decide to do something that you and I would think was absolutely nuts as leaders. They're going to plot to kill him. They want him dead. And they really don't seem to care, if you read from the text, if the blood's on their hands or not, because they're going to do this in secrecy. They wanted him silenced at all costs, because he didn't do what they wanted him to do. Ryan mentioned last week, and if you were here, this really stood out to me. And it's worth noting again. But does this remind you of somebody else that we see in Scripture? Does it remind you of somebody else that the leaders wanted silenced? It does, doesn't it? It's kind of crazy to read again. So what I just covered, let's talk about in today's terms. Because I know for some of you, the high council is kind of a weird thing. The members are kind of a weird thing. So I want to kind of break it down into today's terms. So here's a guy named Paul. He's standing in a courtroom before a judge. And he immediately, without any regard, tells the judge that He's innocent. Turn me loose. And the judge looks over to his bailiff before, I mean, the trial has just started. He's got one sentence out. And the judge looks over to his bailiff and says, go down and slap him. Could you see a judge doing this? Probably not. That's not how most courtrooms work. But the judge has had enough already. Go down and slap him. And Paul responds simply by saying, you can't do that. You're violating my rights. You can't do this. And the judge says, I don't care. Do it anyways. So Paul turns to the jury that is standing there with him, and he says, look, you guys don't think this is right, do you? You don't think he can just order whatever punishment he wants? The trial has to go through. So he starts an argument between the jurors because some of them already have condemned Paul for whatever thing he's accused of without ever hearing the testimony. And some of the others are like, no, we got to hear this whole trial out before we make a decision. We don't get to just do it willy-nilly. And it starts to get heated in the room. And the jurors are fighting, and the judge is losing control of everything. So he orders the trial to be adjourned for a moment so he could recollect and get control of the courtroom. And he says, I want to see both the attorneys back in my chambers. So they go back to the chambers. Paul is on his way back to lock up for a bit till they figure out when they're going to start back. And him and the attorneys decide, we're going to kill him. It's easier than finishing the trial. We don't want to deal with this anymore. Now, I don't know about you, but what started off kind of as a Judge Judy moment escalated, or I should say de-escalated, into a Jerry Springer moment, right? It went from what was to be a controlled environment to complete chaos with nobody using their brain for common sense. So let's recap real quick. Standing up had cost Paul so far in Jerusalem. He'd been accused, he'd been beaten, arrested, ordered whipped, put on trial, slapped, ordered to be slapped, and then taken into Roman custody again. And then finally his life had been threatened. What was supposed to be a really welcomed homecoming back to Jerusalem into a friendly place turned out to be anything but that. There were real consequences and costs to Paul's commitment to following God. So let me share with you a story about standing up. Most of you know our youngest daughter, Addison. But for those of you that don't, let me quickly fill you in. She's the youngest of four kids. She's tough, but she's sweet at the same moment. Okay? Thank you for laughing. I appreciate that. So when she was a sophomore in high school, her and some friends were out in the lobby during lunch, and a bit of a commotion caught her attention. There was a young freshman boy being picked on by a couple of seniors. This boy, Jack, was an easy target for many reasons. It's not the first time the seniors had picked on him, but this time was different. It was really different. Jack had reached his limit with the picking. He had reached his limit with being told he wasn't equal with anybody. He'd had enough. And when he'd reached his limit and he was fed up, he was determined to take the matters into his own hands. Literally. He was willing to fight. So when you see this, I want you to think of, we hear the story of David and Goliath. We have several Goliaths in these boys, these seniors. And then we have Jack, little bitty David. When Addison realized what was about to transpire, she left her friends standing where they were and quickly stepped in. She separated the boys and sent Jack over to where her friends were standing. She proceeded to stand there with the senior boys and in only a way probably my daughter and my wife could, proceeded to give them an earful about their behavior, the inappropriateness of it, and how what they were doing wasn't right. She didn't have to step in. She didn't. She knew that standing up for the quote-unquote little guy wouldn't make her any more popular. She knew that criticizing seniors on their last year of school had the potential to make more trouble for her. And as many of you know, growing up in small schools, all it takes is one event or one rumor to change everything. And it changes how they look at you forever. At the end of the day, she stood up for a kid who was in need because she knew it was the right thing to do. On the good note, fast forward 4 years later, her and Jack are great friends. And I believe that one single moment for Jack had a huge, may have had the biggest impact on his life so far. He's a different kid in an amazing kind of way. And I know that it changed Addison's. So why do I tell this story? Why? Much of like this story, Paul's life was impacted because of his convictions. His transformation from the guy that we knew as Saul, who was persecuting Christians, to the guy who was now traveling all over the world spreading the good news, his transformation had such an impact on him that he was willing to do whatever it took to share God with everyone. And by whatever it took, I mean putting it all on the line, leaving it all out there. Remember our first points? Standing up can cost you. Scripture repeatedly gives an account of the costs Paul endured doing this. Repeatedly, not just one account, repeated accounts of his costs in standing up for God. So let's move on to our second theme. Life doesn't always work out the way it should. I don't know about you guys, but I can feel this one. I can feel this one. So we're going to jump backwards to chapter 23, verse 11. Paul is back in custody of the Roman army after this mess of a trial. And while being held for the night under the security of the Roman army, the Lord appeared to Paul. Acts 23:11, we read, "Be encouraged, Paul. Just as you have been a witness to me here in Jerusalem, you must preach the good news in Rome as well." Paul had been on a mission to get back to Jerusalem. Everything he had done that last several months was getting back to where he was calling home. Along the trip, though, he'd been warned that this may not be the homecoming he had hoped for, that this had the potential to cost him his life. But we see the Lord come to Paul and let him know, by the way, your work's not over yet. He's been called to stand by for what God has prepared for him next. Wait a minute. Wasn't it God who told Paul to go back to Jerusalem? I know some of you are thinking this. So why would God change his mind? And you're right. He was told by God to go back to Jerusalem. But has this ever happened to you in your life? You had a plan in place, and then all of a sudden, someone or something completely changes that plan? For almost 10 years, I served on a leadership team for a mission group that went to Mexico where we did projects in this really small village. We would spend hours, what I would call pre-planning our events, our work trips, and our fun excursions. We wanted people to get the most out of this, and we thought pre-planning was the way to do this. Anybody else ever pre-plan everything? Raise your hand if you're a planner. I want to see how many planners we got in here. All right. How many of you just live by the seat of your pants? There's the people. You guys are fun, I can tell. Okay, you pre-planners, I don't know. You're kind of get off on that. I don't know. But we did. We planned everything. And then not only would we plan, but we would plan plan A, plan B, and then plan C, just in case. And it never failed that we ended up on plan G. Okay? And plan G is God's plan. Didn't matter how much we tried. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to take 2 or 3 minutes around your table, and I want you guys to talk about when you had made plans and they just didn't work out like you thought they would. So take 2 or 3 minutes. Go. All right, everyone, I'm going to kind of reel you back in. I know all of you pre-planners are sharing all those tragically failed events that you have spent countless hours on. But my hope is that in sharing these stories, you can find some inspiration. And I hope you realize we're not alone when it comes to failed plans or changing plans. And that even sometimes these changed plans can work out for the best. Even when it feels like we have utterly failed, there are still great things that can come from this. So I'm going to be honest with you. I had not seen this picture that Lisa has up on the screen right now until just before the service started. But it is great, isn't it? But I want you to look at it, because I don't know about you, my life, my plan actually kind of goes the other way. I don't like to go uphill. I kind of want to go downhill. But usually it ends up going more like God's plan there on the bottom, because I would like to coast down the hill. Then I hit some rocks, and I probably end up in the water. So this picture, to me, adequately represents most of our lives, if I had to guess. We have this nice, easy, thought-out plan ahead. And then God says, watch this. You know the song, Jesus, Take the Wheel? Hold on. That's the reality of it. So as we finish today with verses 23 through 35 out of chapter 23, just real quick, we see the Roman commander make the decision to move Paul to a town called Caesarea, where his case would now be heard by Felix, the Roman governor. So when he called out his Roman citizenship, and they couldn't resolve it in front of the Jewish court because they realized that this was just not going to happen, the Roman commander decides, you know, we're going to take this up the chain, and we're going to put you in front of the big guy and let him handle it from Rome. The Roman commander didn't take any chances, because he knew that Paul's safety was of the utmost importance in this situation. There was a plot to kill him already. So he arranged for Paul to be transferred at night with 200 soldiers, 200 spearmen, 70 mounted troops, and they provided Paul a horse for the journey. Typically, Paul would have walked, and there would not have been this protection. But I don't know about you, a single guy, and they pull out almost 500 men. Something important was getting ready to happen here. And not only that, the commander sent a letter from himself to Felix outlining what had transpired so far to date, and that the plot against him to kill him. Paul ends up in Caesarea, and the governor Felix agrees to hear his case, but he's ordered to be kept in prison at Herod's headquarters. And that's a whole nother thing. I would encourage you to look up what's unique about Herod's headquarters. We don't have time for that, unfortunately. So you'll begin to see how much Paul's plans had changed. Things didn't work out like he thought they were going to. Because in the next couple of weeks, as we continue the series, we're going to dive a little deeper into this. Paul's anticipated homecoming to Jerusalem was anything but what he expected. Much like around your tables when you talked about your plans that didn't turn out, not what you expected. Paul's no different. He's an average guy. But, and what does Pastor Don say about the word but? Something important is coming, right? Paul didn't panic because he was consistently communicating with God and trusted his plans. Paul knew God would lead him to where he needed him the most. Plan G was Rome, and his audience was to get much larger. That was God's plan all along. Maybe not Paul's, but that was God's plan all along. So we just focused on two main themes from our passages today. Paul had suffered because he chose to stand up for God. And even when things got tough, he didn't throw in the towel. And because Paul had been faithful, God chose to put him on standby for another mission. I want to leave you today with three practical points from our message. I'm going to panic for a minute. Lisa, can you help me? Thank you. I got so involved in doing other things and talking to people, I messed up. But we're going to not need that right now anyways. Okay, the first point. If you want to stand up in tough times, then plant yourself on a solid foundation. So where does our foundation come from? For the world, it can come from just about anywhere. But it usually is a sense of what feels good. That foundation is not solid. Because what feels good today probably won't feel good tomorrow. You ever have that situation? I know I have. For Christians, though, our foundation should come from God. He is never changing, He is solid, and He is not emotional. So how do we know who God is? You got to read and study Scripture. You seek out solid teachers. These things help you plant that foundation. When I say solid teachers, think about a rabbi in the sense from the Jewish term. His followers would literally follow him around, right behind him, spending every waking hour with this person. Here at Grace, if you want to develop your foundation, we can talk about Grace U classes. We can talk about mentoring, which is a one-on-one typically. You can even develop that foundation in a home group, which I would encourage you to be involved in. Personally, for me, I've spent the last 5 years on Friday mornings meeting with a group of guys from this church over coffee. It's been amazing. These guys have shown me what genuine Christ-centered relationships look like. And because of them, my understanding of who Christ is has grown deeper. I am more accountable to God. And when I struggle, they're there to pick me up. I'm human, man. I'm just like you. I am human. I have real flaws. And I deal with them every day. Doesn't make my flaws any worse than yours or any better than yours, but I am like you. We have flaws. And these guys are there to help me when I need it. I look forward to Fridays. I like to refer to this as my recharging of my Jesus batteries on Friday mornings. That time prepares me to go into a weekend where I know I'm going to face circumstances in life. it's a great feeling to be recharged. But you have to have that foundation. So if you're interested in building a better foundation for yourself, come see me or any of the staff after the service. We'd be glad to help. Okay? Number two, and this is where I messed up because Lisa just saved my neck. Okay? If you already have a solid foundation, then learn to focus on God. Acts 23:11. The following night, the Lord stood near to Paul and said, "Take courage. As you have testified about me in Jerusalem, so you must testify in Rome." God will be near you every step of the way if you allow him. If you allow him to be with you, he will stand there with you. Since Paul's conversion, the apostle's been on fire to spread the gospel throughout the entire world. He's never backed down because he knows he has God on his side. Going clear back to our first series on Paul, he had been beaten, he'd been stoned to near death, he'd been chased out of towns, he'd been jailed, he'd been accused, forced to stand trial. Heck, even the leaders of the Jewish community on this last journey threatened to kill him. They wanted him dead. It wasn't even a threat. They were going to move forward with it. His focus never wavered, and he knew God's plans for his life. So how do we focus? Thank you, Lisa. We're going to do a little demo here. Imagination. Ready? Fire them up. So we're going to... Did that thing just light up? Oh. Is this the one that shocks when you step in it? Okay. So I want you to picture this. Hula hoop to me was a perfect example. Circle, okay? I'm standing in it. Imagine it's a dome goes over my head. I'm in a bubble. Got it? I don't know about you, but I can be overwhelmed when I'm trying to focus on God because the world throws so many things at me. My wife, my kids, our office, my friends, Facebook, family, everything gets thrown at us. Easily overwhelmed. In my bubble, I have committed myself to Christ. And because I have committed myself to Christ, where does he live? In my heart. Right? Not here, because everything else lives here as well. He lives in my heart. So when I lay this down and I am in my bubble, there are two people in this bubble. Who are they? Me and God. This is how we focus on God. God and I are standing in here, and this is where I am to focus. Me on him, and him on me. I don't have to worry about all of that stuff. Because when I have God in my heart, it's him and I in this. So you're going to say, well, what happens to all of that stuff? Right? That's God's. That's God's. God can take everything that's going on out there and do what he needs to do with it. All he is asking from me is to focus on him in my heart and to let him be with me. So when you're struggling, get yourself a hula hoop, one that lights up, it's really cool, and climb in it. This is all I am in. This is all God asks me to focus on, him and I. You can close your eyes and stand here. I don't see anything going on out there. Don't you throw anything at me, George. But that's the reality of it, right? Let God handle everything outside the circle. You take care of him and you inside the circle. Okay, our third point. If you're already focused on God, then give him the freedom to change your plans. When we hold on too tightly to the plans we believe are for us, we can miss out on some great opportunities for God. Paul could have stayed in his comfort zone in Jerusalem when he was first converted. He could have stayed in Tarsus shortly thereafter. But instead, he listened to God through prayer and thanksgiving, which led him to the three journeys that we've been studying. So are you talking with God regularly? And I suspect some of you are going to tell me yes. And I'm happy for that. But I want to ask you to think about what you're talking to him about. And if you are talking to God, is it a one-way conversation? You ever met somebody like this? We had a great conversation. Well, you didn't get a word in? I'm guilty of it. But if it's a one-way conversation, are you talking to God about your needs and your desires? Or is it a conversation about what you're asking God what he wants you to do for him? If he has revealed something to you because you've asked him, God, what do you want me to do for you? And he has revealed something to you, it's not enough to just hear it. You have to take that first step and do something with it. And then when God says something else, take the second step. And eventually you're going to continue to take the third and the fourth. But when do I stop? When do I change? When do I know if God wants me to? Conversation. When God says it's time to do something else, that's when you change. But in the meantime, he's giving you something to do until then. If you give God control of your life, you'll experience some pretty incredible things. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I'm not saying it's always going to be fun. I'm not saying that there won't be heartbreak and hurt. But serving God is always rewarding. And remember, your prize for following him is eternity with him. And that should be our goal. That should be our goal. All right, let's close in prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, I just want to say thank you for the people who were here today to hear the message. And for those who are listening online or will listen to it later, Father, I hope that we can have the same impact on them as we were able to have here today. Father, it is really easy to assume you have a foundation based on right or wrong. But I would ask you to touch each of our hearts to help us examine whether that foundation is truly yours or is it something else. And if it is not yours, then bring us closer to you, put the right people in our lives, and give us the opportunities to set that foundation. Father, if we got that foundation, then help us to focus on you. Remind us daily that our focus has to be just you. You'll take care of the rest. You will deal with what the world throws at us if we will just come to you and focus on you. And Father, those well-laid plans, I know about half the audience here today said that they are planners. Father, let us not hold too tight to plans. I believe in the sun. Father, help us to come to you and talk to you. I believe in the risen one. Give us the courage to step out. I believe.